vinyl investigator I met with was Dr. Sergio Giralt, and we again addressed questions about myeloma, including a few really choice ones that I also asked Dr. Palumbo. First question, weekly bortezomib was shown to be equivalent to biweekly in the setting of triple or quadruple therapy. Can you make the same assumption if you use bortezomib and dex?
No, the reality is you cannot make the same assumption. Actually, you know, you need to have randomized trials looking at weekly bortezomib dex versus 1, 4, 8, and 11 bortezomib dex. And you actually need to do sub-Q for both to be able to, because the sub-Q route of administration is associated with less neuropathy. You have to remember that the weekly bortezomib was shown to be equivalent, but because the amount of drug administered in weekly bortezomib was actually more than when you gave it biweekly because of the lack of neuropathy.
Because long-term it was more.
Correct.
You were able to get more drug in.
Mm-hmm.
Another question, difference in incidence of infection between biweekly and weekly bortezomib?
The incidence are similar, although some people have said that the weekly bortezomib may be less because they're actually getting less steroids, because sometimes people are not giving. It's the common practice of begin to give the dexamethasone as a premedication for bortezomib. So when you're doing it 1, 4, 8, and 11, patients are getting dexamethasone twice a week for 2 weeks. When you're giving it weekly, you're just giving weekly dexamethasone. I don't think it's ever been looked at. When the randomized trial, it was not significantly different.
Another question, what's the best dose of maintenance lenalidomide? 10 milligrams every day, 15 every day, 25 for 3 out of 4 weeks?
So the current randomized trials looked at 5 to 15 with the option that when everybody started at 10, if they tolerated it well, you could go up to 15. If there was severe myelosuppression, you would go down to 5. The most common dose prescribed was actually 10 milligrams daily, continuously. I actually think we're probably overdosing patients, that the reality is that many patients can get beneficial effects at 5 with a lot less toxicity, but this also needs to be studied further. Personally, most of us believe that the beneficial effect of low-dose lenalidomide is its potent immune stimulatory activity, particularly in regards to natural killer cells.
So what dose do you use?
I usually start at 5 and work my way up.
Another question, are you concerned about the peripheral blood stem cell yield in patients receiving lenalidomide as part of induction regimen?
I definitely am concerned. I'm a strong believer that the more stem cells we give during the transplant, the better patients do. So personally, I have recommended patients who are on lenalidomide induction, which I think is a perfectly good induction to use, that they should be collected between the 4th and 5th cycle, and they probably should be collected either with chemomobilization or with plerixafor.
Do you differentiate prognosis of conventional cytogenetics in FISH? Is 13q equally important if found only by FISH?
That's a very good question. Actually, for those taking the boards, it will probably appear in the board. When deletion 13 is found by fluorescent in situ hybridization alone, it is not, I repeat, it is not of prognostic significance. Only when deletion 13 is found on conventional cytogenetic analysis is it associated with a worse prognosis, probably because these plasma cells have a higher proliferative index, and that's why they were able to grow outside of the microenvironment.
What is the role of PET scanning in multiple myeloma?
So PET scanning has been seen its great degree of controversy. I think the facts are that you will be able to identify PET positive disease outside of MRI and regular skeletal survey. Now that doesn't mean that PET scanning should be considered standard of care for all myeloma patients. It probably should be considered standard of care for patients with truly non-secretory myeloma, which is very rare and far between. The Europeans have shown, as well as the Little Rock group, have shown that patients who normalize their PET scan actually have better prognosis, and they're talking about PET scan CRs and MRI CRs. Unfortunately, most radiologists across the country do not have the training and the expertise to read PET scanning appropriately for myeloma. It's not the same as lymphoma. I think it actually requires further studies. I use PET scanning routinely in my practice.
Here's another one. Could you explain your thought process when evaluating a patient with incompletely controlled diabetes and some mild neuropathy for myeloma treatment?
Very common and interesting question, because it's a very practical question. So if I have a patient who comes in with diabetes, multiple myeloma, and mild neuropathy. And actually, let's add to this a little bit of mild renal insufficiency. So I do my myeloma staging, and the beta-2M comes back at 6, creatinine 1.8, and the hemoglobin comes around 10. And I look at the fundoscopic exam, and I see that there is evidence of diabetic retinopathy. So the first thing is, how do I separate what is myeloma versus what is diabetes to risk stratify? And there's no easy way to do this. A patient like this, if I do the bone marrow and the bone marrow is packed full of plasma cells, I would err on the side of considering that this patient has aggressive high tumor mass myeloma. If on the contrary, I do a bone marrow and I only see 12% plasma cells and they look relatively indolent and normal, I would err on the side of saying that at least the beta 2 microglobulin and some of the other issues I'm seeing are due to diabetic end stage organ. Now, having said that, what does that make a difference? I think the sub-Q bortezomib issue now helps us make a decision. Before sub-Q bortezomib, I would have struggled between giving this patient bortezomib IV or giving lenalidomide with renal dysfunction. Now with sub-Q bortezomib, I feel very comfortable giving this patient sub-Q bortezomib dexamethasone. Depending on what the creatinine is, I'll give lenalidomide or not, and I'll treat them as a regular patient. If the blood sugars are very out of control, I'll start them on very low-dose dexamethasone, and usually I get an endocrinologist to see them and handle the patient with me.
So kind of a related question. For patients who don't tolerate bortezomib IV because of neuropathy, is there any role for trying it again subcutaneously?
No data to guide us. I would be very, very cautious.
This one I thought you'd like a lot. You kind of alluded to before, but I like the way it was phrased here. Is it time to read the obituary of transplant and myeloma in the era of novel therapies?
I've heard that question many times. So we should try to get away from this issue about trying to bury transplant. It's not a religion, and it shouldn't even be an article of faith. So when we talk about autologous transplant in myeloma, we're actually talking about high-dose melphalan. And the only thing that allows us to give high-dose melphalan is the fact that we have cells in the freezer that can serve as an antidote. So, high-dose melphalan remains the single most important drug for myeloma. It has the highest CR rate as a single agent. It has the higher overall response rate as a single agent. So what's the main problem with high-dose melphalan? That it requires patients to be hospitalized for approximately 3 weeks, or if it's an outpatient program, you have to be seen every day for 3 weeks. And it disrupts people's lives for anywhere between 3 to 6 months, depending on recovery. I think we can actually improve upon that, and that it shouldn't be a discussion about, whether we should write the obituary of transplant. This is a very active drug, whether it be used first or afterwards. I think will depend on the randomized trials that we are doing. I would say the burden of proof is on not doing transplant up front, because most of the randomized trials have shown a progression-free survival benefit. All of these trials are old. As I discussed in the beginning of the program, we already have one trial looking at early versus late transplant, showing that early transplant was associated with better disease control. At the end, transplant's a choice, it's not a necessity, and it's a choice that patients will make based on the recommendations of their physicians.
So let's close with a couple cases that were posed here. First one, 60-year-old patient with non-secretory myeloma who presented with severe pancytopenia, platelets less than 20,000, ANC less than 500, hemoglobin 7, bone marrow biopsy, 80% plasma cells, kappa restricted, no M spike, no lytic lesions, no renal insufficiency. What's the best treatment? Of note, the patient has good performance status and no significant comorbidities.
So let's go over 60-year-old, right?
Right.
So how did he present? Beta 2 microglobulin was what?
They don't say it. They just say presented with severe pancytopenia, bone marrow biopsy, 80% plasma cells.
And do we have cytogenetics?
They don't say what it is.
You see, I think one of the important things, particularly when we're seeing a patient who's pancytopenic, is make sure that all they have is myeloma and they don't have myeloma in association with MDS, because that would change the way we would approach these patients.
Myeloma with MDS.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So remember, these patients are older and one doesn't protect you from the other one.
Hmm.
And they can occur concurrently, although rare. I would say by the presentation, this patient has high tumor mass myeloma, probably high-risk disease, and needs to be treated aggressively. I would say that we should start this patient with a combination of bortezomib, dexamethasone, lenalidomide. I would probably start at lower doses of lenalidomide because of the risk of severe pancytopenia and work my way up. Others would say, let's just start bortezomib, dexamethasone first, and then once we are able to reduce the myeloma burden and recover some form of normal hematopoiesis, you can do triple therapy. I think in practice, many of us who are doing VRD realize that the first cycle usually is bortezomib dexamethasone because it takes up to 2 to 3 weeks to get the lenalidomide shipped to the patient. So transplant eligible, treat aggressively, triple therapy if possible. After 4 cycles, collect cells and send to transplant.
So the last case, 58-year-old physician with IgG kappa myeloma, 80% bone marrow involvement, M spike 10 grams, induction RVD with VGPR, goes on to auto transplant with very minimal change in the M spike, 2 cycles of consolidation lenalidomide with some improvement, now on maintenance lenalidomide with slow increase in the M spike. Any role for further consolidation? Patient had neuropathy from prior bortezomib.
So I think this is actually an issue we're seeing more and more. What do you do with a patient who has low-level disease on lenalidomide maintenance and is slowly creeping up? And I think here what we need to remember is that we're not treating the protein, we're treating the patient. And we can actually hurt people more by trying to reduce that protein to a level that the patient not necessarily will benefit or not benefit of. I think as long as that patient is asymptomatic and tolerating the lenalidomide dose well, I would continue to observe with the current treatment and not change therapies. Once the patient shows definitive signs of progression, either because there's new lytic lesions or there's progressive anemia or extensive marrow infiltration that I think, okay, the patient has passed the threshold of therapy and that I need to change, then I would probably reinduce them with triple therapy and then try some other form of investigational maintenance therapy. We and others have protocols for these type of patients. I think this is a great place to explore immune maneuvers such as vaccines and the monoclonal antibody against natural killer cells.